Hello, Blatherites. This is Reed. I'm doing this podcast on Saturday at around 12:15 in the afternoon. I thought I'd try something different on the weekends. Instead of sitting in front of the keyboard and typing out 2,000, 2,500 words as I do for most of my articles, that takes a long time. And I'd like to try something different. I've been doing a couple of the historical podcasts lately, and it's gotten a lot of good commentary from you guys. Everyone seems to like them, so I thought what I'd do is jot down some things during the week that I wanted to discuss, and then I'll discuss them with you. We'll talk about Pitt football and anything else that comes to my mind, but I want this to be a little bit of time where you can be on your jog in the morning or doing yard work and put your earphones in, and instead of having to have a computer screen in front of you or cell phone in front of you, then you can just listen and do whatever you want to do and get back on the computer later on and tell me what a jerk I am. So, that's what I'll do from now on the weekends. I'll try to do at least one. And I'll try to hit enough of the different aspects of Pitt football that we're interested. We have a good season, I think, coming up. I don't know if it's going to be a good winning or losing season, but any season where you have a kid coming back from cancer and coming off a winning season is going to be a good season no matter what. We are Pitt fans. We're going to enjoy it. I know that all of us are. We might go crazy with wins and losses. I think we're going to have some pretty heavy losses in the beginning of the season. I hope not, but I think we will. Anyway, we'll discuss that. I also want to discuss some of the historical stuff because we do have a lot of young readers on the blather, and I can tell that some of them, when us older guys sit around and talk about the glory days or even, you know, the 1990s and early 2000s, some of the guys on here don't know really get what we're talking about. So I'd like to incorporate a little bit of that every time also. One of the first things I'd like to talk about is the latest comments we had on a couple of my articles from you readers, where the common thread in thought seems to be that we're not going to have much of a passing game. Or maybe that's not what everyone meant. Maybe they meant we're just going to have such a strong running game that's going to carry us on. And I kind of wonder why people are saying that. I know we lost Tyler Boyd. And anytime you lose a star like that, it's going to leave less of an impact, of course, than what he had on the team over the last 3 years. But the reality is last year he didn't really stand out. He stood out on the Pitt team, but he didn't really match his totals that he did from the other 2 years previous, his freshman and his sophomore years. So I was wondering earlier after I read some of those comments about what has happened in the past when Pitt has lost a star player. And, you know, when I say star player, I'm really going to talk about the offensive skill positions because those are the most measurable ones. That's where you have yardage and yards per carry, yards per reception, touchdowns, things like that. Those are easily ranked numbers that we can talk about. Now, of course, Aaron Donald was a huge loss, and last year's defensive line didn't do so well without him. That kind of impact is not quantifiable, really. I mean, you could talk about his sacks or his hurries or his tackles behind the line of scrimmage, which were awesome. I mean, the guy was the quickest off the line I've ever seen in my lifetime. So he was always in the opponent's backfield, but that's for another time. We'll talk about the defense some other time. But to get back to what I see happening with our offense going into 2006 is that we're going to have James Conner back. Now, on the face of that, it's a wonderful thing on the face of it. Let's just be honest about that. But as far as football goes, I'm not sure what kind of an impact he's going to make. I am glad he's going to be able to be out there in the field. I think he's going to be raring to go into the fall camp and even before, now that he has a clean slate from the doctor. And as they were talking about in the videos I posted the other day, the doctors were saying that once he got his medical port out, that where the chemo went through into his chest, once that heals up, and that's like any other little wound, I suppose, it shouldn't take too long to heal, then he'll be able to go full bore and full contact. Now, according to the NCAA regulations, players can't go full contact until the second week of fall camp. So he's going to have a lot of time to heal up completely, to get in shape. And I think mentally he's going to be right there. That's not going to be a problem for him. We've seen why his mental state over the last couple months has been fascinating. Wonderful, but I think fascinating too. It's just amazing to me how well he did mentally and the outreach that he kept doing during the whole time he was sick. Back to football, though. It's not going to be an easy thing for him to replicate what he did as a sophomore. I don't think he'll do it, to be honest. For one reason, we have another running back that is a damn good one. Olsen was over just about, if not over, 5 yards per carry. And to me, that's one of the most important statistics in a running back's, when you talk about running backs. It's the yards per carry. How consistent are they? Especially on third down situations. You know, Connor was fantastic back in 2014 on third downs. I looked up the percentage of third downs that we had completed in 2014. It was almost 50%, which is the benchmark that you want to have. And we were right up there. We were, I think, in the top 20 nationally in conversions. And then last year, without Connors, we slipped back down. We were at 43. And now 7% or 6% doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. Especially depending on what the circumstances of the game are and what quarter you're in. So that kind of thing is really where the good running backs stand out. Tony Dorsett was fantastic on the long runs, but he was pretty good getting up through the middle on the first downs. He could pick up 4 or 5 yards when he needed to. But he got caught behind the line of scrimmage a lot too. Now, I can't remember James Conner maybe once or twice, 3 times maybe, I can't really remember, being caught behind the line of scrimmage. Every time he touches the ball, he gets positive yardage. And that is something that's immeasurable, for one thing. I'm sure some statistic nerd on the internet has it somewhere. I look a lot, I do a lot of research about statistics, and I can't find something like that. But you all, I think, would agree, the general feeling is that when you give James Conner the football, he's going to fall forward at least a yard over the line of scrimmage. And he ranked, he was up over five yards per carry easily, but so was Olsen. I just took a break and looked up Conner's 2014 season. Okay, so here's the numbers he had. He was a sophomore, and he played in all 13 games, 298 carries. He had 1,765 yards and 26 rushing touchdowns. And here's an even better or more interesting stat about that. Conner, I'm looking at the NCAA website right now, in 2014-2015 season, his average yards per rush were almost 5.92. That's outstanding. And he only lost 35 yards rushing. So obviously he was tackled a few times behind the line of scrimmage. But only 35 yards on 298 carries. So he actually had 1,800 yards rushing, if you put it that way. And his long, he had 135.77 yards per game in 2014. Now, that is going to be very hard for him to replicate. Now, compare that with Quadri Olsson's season last year. And he had 212 rushing attempts. So it's, 88 less than Conner did the year before. He gained 1,121 on the ground. Actually, he lost 37. So he was about the same as Conner was. He was tackled behind the line of scrimmage, 30 for 37 yards. And he had 86 yards rushing per game. So he doesn't match the same numbers as Conner did. But then again, very few people would. Conner was number 7th in the nation in 2014. So if you take Quadri Olsson's 5.29 yards per rush, and you multiply it by that extra 98 or 88 carries he didn't get, he'd be right up there with Conner's. He'd be right around 1,590 or 1,600, I believe. So, we lost James Conner last year. Quadri Olsson stepped in and did a good job. Now, he didn't get the touchdowns that Conner did. Very few people would. Conner got 26 touchdowns in 2014 and broke Tony Dorsett's record. Well, Olsson didn't do the same thing. So, that's where we lost a little bit. And we had Nate Peterman added three or four touchdowns, I believe, over Wojtek's 17. I think Peterman had 20 or 21. So we picked up a couple there, and then we also had some other running backs to get theirs. But our offense was not as good last year as it was in 2014. So how are we going to pick up the slack with that? Either Connor comes back full speed, which I don't think he will, to be honest. I hate to be a downer. I think he's going to be 75% or 80%, at least in the beginning of the year. And Narduzzi and Canada are still going to run Olsen. I firmly believe that. I don't think Connor's going to start out as a starting running back. If they do that, I mean, I'm sure if he plays well in camp and he does what he did 2 years ago in camp, well, then maybe I guess they're going to start him. I think they need to work him in slowly. I think they need to get Olsen on track right away. And I know Penn State's a big game. Pitt and Penn State, the second game of the year on September 10th, is a huge game for us, especially because we haven't played them since 2003 or whatever it is. So we all want to see Connor come out of the tunnel. We want to see him carry the ball, and I do too. I want that. But I want to beat Penn State more than anything else. And if Quadri Olsen gives us a chance to beat Penn State by carrying a ball, and then Oklahoma State, and then North Carolina, those are three tough teams in a row. They got to play the back that's going to give them the best chance to win. And if that's James Conner, boy, that'd be a great story and a wonderful thing to have happen. But if it's not, then they need to be realistic and play Olsen. We have Ibrahim coming back in. He's good out of the backfield for swing passes. He had a really nice over. I think he had a 5 yards per carry average in 2014 also. And then we have this kid, Shantaz Moss, who he might really open up some eyes in fall camp. So we're going to have a good running game going in to this season. And I think because of that, the fans are really downplaying what we can do in the passing game. I'm a firm believer, and I've always believed this, that especially in college football, when you lose a star player, you're going to have someone step up and maybe not take the place of that one player, but other players are going to step up and do what they need to do because everyone gets their chance on the big stage. That's what it is. And a lot of times we are so used at Pitt to, we really are used to these running backs coming in as freshmen or sophomores and blowing up. And what happens is we tend to think that that happens with all players, that if they're not good in the first or second year, then they're not going to be any good to us at all. Well, that's not the case at all. We saw Dontez Ford as a junior last year. He had almost a 20 yards per carry, per catch average. He had over half the yards that Tyler Boyd did. He had 505. Boyd had, I think, 986 or something like that. But he had almost a quarter of the carries. The catches that Boyd did. And he was much more productive than Tyler Boyd last year. And he's going to be our featured receiver this year, too. Dontez Ford is a good ball player. And I think he's as fast as Boyd. But, you know, when you have the elephant in the room, which is Tyler Boyd in the last 3 years, and thank goodness we've had him because he's been a wonderful ball player for us. But there's not a lot of growth allowed when you have that kind of a player on the field. Now, that's a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, the good thing is you got that kind of a player on the field. But the bad thing is you don't know what you have after that. Now, the coaches pretty much know. And from what I gather, my conversations is they're not too worried about the wide receiver core. As a matter of fact, I think they're looking forward to seeing what some of these younger kids can do. Jester Wade has been catching the ball in camp. He had the yips, which is pretty interesting, I think. We make a lot of jokes about Jester Way because he hasn't been able to catch the ball, but he literally hadn't been able to catch the ball. He had a mental problem with that, and that's not unusual in sports. We've seen it happen to a lot of people. I'm trying to write a book, and I've got writer's block right now. That's why I'm putting out so many articles. So that's the yips in the writing way. But he might turn out to be good. We have the two Henderson kids, Quadri Henderson. He looked really good in the spring game. And we have Challingsworth, who reminds me a lot of of the old tight end, Mike, well, you know, Mike Shanahan. That's who I'm thinking of. So we have talent there. We might just not have talent on the same level as Tyler Boyd, but we have an experienced quarterback coming back. You know, at this time last year, we were all talking about Chad Vojtek and how much we were looking forward to seeing how he was going to do in his second year. I think people tend to forget that Nate Peterman was exactly the same stage of his career as Chad Vojtek was last year. They were both first-year starters. I mean, obviously, Vojtek had started in 14, but that was his first year starting. Last year was Peterman's first year starting. And remember, whenever you look at Peterman's numbers, you have to understand he didn't play two games. He didn't play hardly at all. I think one series in the first game, and not even a quarter in the second game. So all those stats you're looking at, he could have really had a better year if you factor in the fact that he might have had, you know, those two more games to play. Now, he tanked at the end. And that was, I didn't expect that to happen. It was two of the, I didn't think Miami was going to be that tough of a game. I thought we were going to win even if one or two of our stars played poorly. But he played poorly in that game. There's no way you can put the blame on any one person for the Navy game, but certainly Peterman didn't play well enough in the first half to keep us in the game. Now, our defense played really poorly. But, you know, you're a good player. If you want to be the star on a team, you have to carry the team when it needs it, and he didn't do it. So, excuse me, I'm done talking about... excuse me. I'm done talking about the comparisons between Vojtek and Peterman, Vojtek's ancient history nowadays. So we look forward to seeing Peterman, and this is going to be his year. He's a senior this year. I think he's going to do really well. I think he's going to have the running game to take the heat off of the passing game. I know he doesn't have Tyler Boyd, but he's going to have a lot more people to throw to. Jim Chaney really controlled the offense last year. His play calling did not suffer anyone going up to the line of scrimmage and calling audibles. He didn't want to see that. So you didn't see that with Peterman. Peterman went through his progressions, but the bottom line was Chaney wanted the ball to go to Tyler Boyd as much as possible. And Boyd didn't have that great of a year. He did not play as well last year as he played 2 years before. He only had a 10-yard per reception average, which is mediocre. And it's actually poor for a receiver, especially your number one receiver. The year before it was 13 or 14, and I think the year before that it was 15 or 16. So I want to segue from this point when we're talking about Tyler Boyd and his impact last year, and now that we're going to be missing him in 2006 season, how has this happened in the past, and what exactly did Pitt do, or how did it happen for Pitt to make up for the loss of that talent from the year before? Earlier this week, I was thinking about the same subject. So what I did was I made up a table that I'll include in the article today. And I thought about our major wide receivers that we've had, the really, really good ones we've had, and what happened when they graduated. So I have a table I'm going to talk about here. And I could only go back to 2003 because really the stats, it's kind of hard to find stats before then, but... In the modern time, since the year 2000, this is what has happened with the Pitt receiving corps. In 2003, we had Larry Fitzgerald. Should have been a Heisman Trophy winner. I don't think there's any doubt in the Pitt fans' mind about that. He had a freaking amazing year. He had 92 catches for 1,672 yards. Now, his yards per catch, again, this is what, just like a running back, this is the most important thing that a receiver can have. And his 18.2 yards per catch, which is outstanding. And additionally, he had 22 touchdowns, which was by far a Pitt record. So he had, out of the team's total offense of 3,721, 3,721 yards was the total offense Pitt put out that year. He had 1,672 yards of that. So he had, what was that, a little bit less than half the offensive output. Freaking amazing. Anyway, following him then was Greg Lee. Okay, so looking at Fitz and Lee in the years 2003-2004, I just figured this out. I took a break and figured out the percentage of the offense they were. So Fitz was 45%. In 2003, he had 45% of the yards of total offense we had. The year afterwards, the replacement of Fitzgerald, Lee, had 42%. Pretty much right up there. Of course, he didn't get close to the touchdowns. He had 10 compared to Fitz's 22. But still, as far as output goes, according to the offense, then he was pretty much right up there with 42%. Okay. The next year, Greg Lee has his great year. Remember, he decided to declare as a junior and didn't go anywhere. It was a big mistake. But that junior year he had in 2005, he had he went down a little bit, but he had a pretty decent season. But here's the deal. Craig Lee, in both his years, he averaged over 19 yards per catch. That's 19 yards per catch is pretty damn good. Okay, so in 2005, Greg Lee dropped a little bit, had a lesser of a junior year than he did his sophomore year, and he had 962 yards. Again, 19.7 average, 7 touchdowns. And out of the 2,409 total yards for the offense, he had 40%. If you have 40% or overs, you're really contributing. Okay. After that, we had Derek Kinder, by the way, that year was Lee's understudy. He was the number 2 wide receiver. This year after that, Derek Kinder fleets up. In 2006, he has 57 catches, 846 yards for a 14.9 yards per catch with 6 touchdowns, and he's 29%. So, bit of a drop-off from Lee to Kinder, but still, Kinder played good ball that year. So now we come up to the more recent times. Under Paul Christ, we had Devin Street. He played. He had 73 catches that year for 975 yards, a 13.4 yards per catch, 5 touchdowns, and had 29% of the total offense. So he leaves, and we think, okay, we have a star. And Boyd comes in, does well. One of his better years. Matter of fact, his best year. He had 85 catches for 1,174 yards at a 13.8 yards per reception. That's the best that he had in his career, 13.8. Now remember, we're talking about people with 18.2, 19.1, 19.7. Ford last year, 19.4. So he has a 13.8 for 7 touchdowns, and he's 38% of the offense. So he's right there. He's right up there. Pitt has always been pretty much of a run-heavy team, but he had a great year for us that year. Boyd never scored as many touchdowns as we thought he would, I think, at least in my opinion. I thought he'd be much more of a touchdown machine, but he really kind of fell apart on the TDs there. But then again, our quarterbacks don't throw a lot of touchdowns. Wojtek in 14 had 17, and Peterman last year had 20. So it's not like we have some guy slinging Danny Marino style for 35 touchdowns out there. Okay, so Boyd, the next year, he really dropped. So last year, I think he dropped a lot from 2014 to 2015. Now, he actually had 6 more catches. He had 91 catches, but he had 200 less yards. He had 926 yards for a 10.2 yards per catch. And that's why I said earlier, it's not very good at all. That's actually kind of poor. So last year, as Boyd's understudy, Ford had 26 catches. And again, compared to Boyd's 91 catches, he had 505 yards compared to Boyd's 926 yards. But Ford had a 19.4 reception average. Scored 2 touchdowns. Now, again, to reiterate what I said before, Dontaze Ford was not going to do any better than that because he wasn't going to get very more catches than that. The primary target for 3 years has been Tyler Boyd, Tyler Boyd, Tyler Boyd. Now, Tyler Boyd in 2014 was the 15th leading receiver in the NCAA. Last year, he was a 48th leading receiver. I don't think his talent level got any lower, but the fact is that he was not as much a contributor to the offense last year as he was the 2 years before. And I think, and don't get me wrong here, he's a little bit of a detriment to the offense because the mindset was still Tyler Boyd. that Jim Chaney thought he was going to be able to replicate all those yards that he got and all those, you know, that good 13.8 yards per carry. I mean, excuse me, yards per catch. I don't know why I can't say that. But he didn't, and that's the bottom line. So that's why I'm a little bit wondering why everyone thinks that the running game is going to be so great that we're not going to really try to thrive on a passing game. And I think we're going to see the opposite. I think our running game is going to be very good, but there's a lot of question marks there. James Conner is a big question mark, guys. Let's be honest. As much as we want to hope and will him to come back and kick ass like he did in 14, he might not do that. So I think we're going to see Matt Canada open up the passing game a lot more. I know Peterman can throw the deep ball. I've seen him do it. And believe me, I've talked to the guys, the staff there, and they, you know, both this year and last year, and Chaney just didn't call that. But Peterman can throw a deep ball. And we're going to see that with Canada this year. He's going to open up, and we're going to see the ball being spread around a lot more. Now, I thought we'd go to the tight ends a lot more last year, especially because Peterman was in his first year of a system and first year starting, and the tight ends were good. But you know what? Our offensive line wasn't that great last year at pass protection either, and the tight ends had to stay in a lot. Which leads me to another question is, why in the world does everyone think our offensive line is going to be that great? We have a lot of returning talent. I think that's true. And I think they were pretty good at the run game last year, at run blocking. And I think they'll be good at run blocking this year. But the key to this season for me right now is how well the offensive line pass blocks and how well Peterman throws to the different receivers he's going to have out there to throw to. If we don't get better at that, it wasn't that great last year. And if we don't get better at that, we're going to lose football games. And I think that when you play teams like Penn State, and you can say what you want about 7-5 and blah, 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 Penn State and Pitt, Penn State's a strong team. It's going to be, they're going to come in here, they're going to want to kick our asses. You know, even though we're out of conference, they're not going to take it like an out of conference game. You know, they're not going to take it lightly at all. That's going to be a dogfight. And if we want to beat Oklahoma State and North Carolina as a conference game, we are going to have not only a balanced offense, but a quick strike offense. We're going to have to get up on points right away. We're going to have to hope the defense holds them. So that was question number one in my mind this week. It was why were all the readers and commenters, and it's not just on a blather. I go to the message boards and everything, and I read all this. And we're going to be solid on a run. It's going to be all running. Running's going to be our first priority. And I'm thinking, guys, don't forget about the passing game. So that was point number one I wanted to make in the podcast. So to follow up a little bit on the Penn State game, and you know, I think you can throw the all the predictions out the window. I know we're, 7-point favorites going into it, at least in the summer. I think that's ridiculous. But, and then talking about the historical aspect a little bit, I have found this other article. I know I posted some historical stuff the other day, but this is an article was published on June 1st in the New York Times that is pretty interesting. It says, Pitt may have the edge in gathering quality football recruits. And I'm not sure if I read this or not. To be honest, I can't figure it out. Anyway, here it goes. Now the 1981 college football recruiting season has ended and the incoming freshmen are signed, it is generally conceded that Notre Dame, under its new head coach, Jerry Faust, had about the best results. Michigan attracted several well-regarded high school stars, and Pittsburgh seems to have done almost as well as Notre Dame and Michigan, and possibly a bit better than its rival, Penn State. Remember, this is 1981, the Marino years, right? The recruiting results seem to indicate that there will not be a serious shift in power in the East for some time. Pitt and Penn State should remain dominant for the next few years and even increase their strength because, in attracting high school players, winning is a magnet, as is the chance to move on to professional football. Again, this is something we talk about at Pitt a lot. Pittsburgh had made a big mark for the future recruiting when 12 of its seniors, led by the defensive end Hugh Green, were drafted by the National Football League teams last month. The Pitt group was the largest number of players drafted from any college this year. And it goes on to say, now Paterno wants to create a formal Eastern Major College League. We talked about this. He thinks that such a league will attract even more of the highly sought athletes to stay in the area. But one of the strongest opponents of the idea for a league among Eastern teams is Pittsburgh. which must be included for the plan to be a success. Paterno envisions a league as one with Pitt, Penn State, Boston College, Syracuse, Temple, West Virginia, Rutgers, and possibly Virginia Tech. Stop me if you heard this before, Big East. He's even talked to Army and Navy about it. But Pitt is looking toward the Big Ten and hoping there will be an opening. I think I did already address that in an article not too long ago. But this is interesting because it reminds me that nothing really stays the same in college football. You know, we went from the Big East. We wanted to go to the Big Ten even back in the day. In the 30s, we wanted to be part of the Big Ten, and they wouldn't have us. And then we talked about Ed Litchfield's column the other day, that article in Sports Illustrated he wrote, and we wanted to join the Big Ten then, and they wouldn't have us. But that back then, the Big Ten was a Midwestern conference, and they kind of wanted to stay a Midwestern conference. It wasn't until this whole Eastern Conference League that Paterno wanted fell apart that they applied to the Big Ten and pretty much begged the Big Ten to take them, and Big Ten looked at the demographics and said, sure, we'll take it. Just like they did with Rutgers the last couple of years. They looked at Rutgers and they said, okay, this is the whole deal is now football television. The television contracts are everything. So that's why they jumped on Rutgers, because they had the whole Northeast up there, and you know, no one really cares about Boston College. And Connecticut is lost in the hinterlands now. So the Big Ten wanted them. So this is all part and parcel of the history of Pitt football. We revolved around two teams, really. Well, back when I was young, it was Notre Dame and Penn State. West Virginia wasn't a big deal. But now, lately, it was not Penn State. We didn't play them at all, thanks to Joe Paterno. And it was West Virginia was the big rival we had. Notre Dame once a year, West Virginia once a year. And I always loved playing Navy. I think the Navy was a natural rival for Pitt because of the closeness of the two schools. They're only 400 miles apart. And it's just the best away game you can possibly go to. I know a lot of you guys came down for the bowl game, and it was fantastic. So our schedule this year does include Notre Dame, doesn't include West Virginia, won't for any sort of time. I think that's too bad. A lot of guys hate him. I don't. I think I want to beat him every year. But it was a good rivalry to have, and it was something to talk about all the time. So that's done and gone now. There have been a few times on the blather that I've written articles about the stars of today and the stars of yesterday. I guess when you think about I just did an All-American thing not too long ago, the other day, as a matter of fact. But when you think of the big stars that we've had on the Pitt teams lately, we've had Aaron Donald, which was fantastic. He won every single award he could possibly win as a defensive player, I believe. LeSean McCoy, who did well as a freshman and a sophomore. And by the way, going back to the old concept of when you take your fist out of the water, meaning when a star player leaves a team, the other water closes in over the vacuum, over the hole. I had a long conversation after LeSean's last game of the 2008 season with a fan. We were a bunch of fans. We were sitting at a table drinking beer. And they were all lamenting the fact that he was going to be gone. He was going to declare for the draft. I knew he was going to do it. He had 2 years and he wasn't going to stick around. He was never a real big Pitt player, you know, big university guy anyway. He actually was going to go to Miami. He didn't even have any consideration for Pitt at all before he got injured his senior year in high school. Anyway, I knew that he had no ties to the university, so as soon as he was going to go, and because he went to prep school, the rule is if you go to prep school for a year, you can leave college football ranks and declare for the draft after your sophomore year. Anyway, we're sitting around the table drinking a bunch of beer, and I said, we're not going to miss him at all. And they looked at me like we're crazy. You know, I was crazy, and they said, what do you mean? And I said, you know what? Running backs in this system with Dave Wannstedt are going to thrive. They're just going to do well because this is how the team's built. Now, that was back in the run days of Dave Wannstedt, and we really did. Of course, he didn't have good quarterbacks either. He handcuffed Tyler Palko, Palko went from what was it, 3,500, 3,300 yards passing down to 2,700 yards, or even less than that, I think 2,400 yards. Now, his passing efficiency went up, but Wannstedt didn't like the passing game when he first came into the college ranks. He remembered when he was here in 1970, 71, what was it, 71, 72, 73, 74, and he was on the offensive line blocking for Tony Dorsett, and we ran the ball, ran the ball. That's what we did. Matt Cavanaugh was not a good passer. I mean, he had Gordon Jones, sometimes he hit him. But that's the mindset Wannstedt brought down here. So I knew that I didn't know anything about Deion Lewis. I had no idea who was being recruited, really. I was paying attention, but I wasn't paying attention like I am now, because I wasn't writing back then for the Blather. But I knew that we were going to follow this up. And I have the same feeling. This is what we just talked about. I have the same feeling that we're going to find out the same deal with Tyler Boyd. I don't think it'll be one person. It'll be a bunch of different guys. But anyway, modern day stars that we're talking about are really Dan Marino for quarterback and Tony Dorsett. And I believe in Dorsett's case, it was because of the really sterling college career he had. Of course, we know he set all those records. He had 64, I think, if I remember correctly, 64 records. By the time he left college football. And he, helped us win the championship. He is the first guy to go over 2,200 yards, 2,000 yards. He got, 2,150, I believe. 2,150 in his senior season. And, of course, scored all those touchdowns. We all thought he was going to be number one in the draft. But Ricky Bell was also a very, very good player. He was bigger than Dorsett, and the NFL thought that he'd do a better job. So Ricky Bell went first out of USC, and then Dorsett went second. And then Dorsett followed up with an excellent NFL career. One time, I believe he was a leading rusher in NFL history. I might be wrong. I don't follow the pros as much as I follow college. Well, in Dan Marino's case, though, was a little bit different. Marino was a good college quarterback, and he was really a good college quarterback for Pitt. But I think he was kind of overrated. You know, it's hard to tell anybody that any player that's on an 11-1 team is overrated. But Dan Marino threw a ton of interceptions. He threw almost as many interceptions as he did touchdowns. And his junior year, he had a very good year. And his senior year, he kind of tanked. I wouldn't have wanted anyone else to be quarterback other than Dan Marino. He had a fantastic arm. He knew football as much as any college quarterback probably ever did. He was born to play the game. A wonderful baseball player, by the way. I played against him in Little League. I guess I was in Pony League when he was in Little League. But anyway, he was the... He was my newspaper boy for like a couple months in the summer one year. Took over for the regular guy. Anyway, I like Dan Marino, but I think that he, when you look at what he did in college, it really wasn't where he made his name nationally. Where he made his name nationally was in the pros. But because of his wonderful career with the Dolphins, never went in a bowl, Super Bowl. Too bad, but he was fantastic and joy to watch, especially because he was from Pitt for us guys. But the conversation when you talk about Dan Marino, it always comes back around to, well, it was a different game back then. It was a different way of playing back then. And in a large sense it's true. But we're much more past happy, not Pitt so much, but college football on a whole is much more of a passing game, and it's way more of an offensive game than it was back in the 76 and the 82 years, back in those years back then. And I just I was looking at the NCAA stats and trying to compare what the rushing totals were for the leaders, for like the top 10 leaders of each year, and I looked at James Conner's stats and with his great year that he had rushing in 2014. I think, what did he have? I just said it, 1791 yards. And he was number 15. No, he was number 7 in the nation that year rushing. Number 7. Now, okay, 1,791 yards, he was number 7. Of course, last year we had, 2014 had that kid, Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin. It just came out of nowhere and just, oh, he didn't come out of nowhere. He was good. But, I mean, he had like 2,500 yards or something like that. He had some, I don't really know. It was amazingly outrageous. Anyway, to compare Connor's year back to and 1791 and being number 7 nationally, I look back to Tony Dorsett's year when he had 2,100 yards and was number 1. But they had that year we had Tony Dorsett with 2,150. Number 2 was a kid named Terry Miller out of Oklahoma State. And he had 1,714. So right there, you got 1,700 yards was number 2. And 2 years ago, Connor's almost 1,800 yards was number 7. But right after those two, it drops down to 1,588. It was Andre Herrera from Southern Illinois. So the top three goes from 2,100 down to almost 1,600. Now, in 14... 1,600 would have put you around 35th or 40th or so. I just looked at it. I can't remember the exact number. But it would have put you way down in the rushing leaders. And so that, and I checked a couple more years also, not just 2014. So even the running game was much more pronounced now than it was back then. Back then it was, you had a horse and you stuck with him. You had a horse, and you stuck with him, and he wasn't doing well. You spread out the carries. Every once in a while, you would have some guys that would really come out and just do amazingly well. But for all that yardage Tony Dorsett got, he only had, I think, just about a 5.0 yards per carry. He carried a ball a ton for us. That was it's pretty amazing. And that's why when you look at James Conner, with a 5.9 yards per carry in 14, that's outstanding. Even a half a yard more per carry is very good. But to have a full yard per carry more. Now, remember, he was carrying 298 times less in 2014. So I think it's interesting the difference between the football play of 30 years ago and the play of today. And I just think that when you talk about Pitt, at least with me, when you talk about Pitt icons, and that's what Danny Marino is, nobody wants to hear anything negative about him. And I don't have a lot of negative things to say. I just remind people that he threw a lot of TDs also. Of course, he threw those wonderful passes, that especially the Sugar Bowl that won us the game, that tight end John Brown pass that was, people forget it was over 30 yards. It was 33 yards and it was a fourth down. I mean, and the magic of that whole play was that when Cheryl called a timeout on fourth down and had Danny Marino come to the sideline, he didn't even let Cheryl say anything. He just turned to coach and said, "We're going for it." And Cheryl recollected later on, he goes, "I had no choice in the matter," which is what Danny Marino was all about. He was a leader. I don't think we've had a leader like him in a long time. Tyler Palko, maybe. But it's been offense by committee, mostly, in the days since Dan Marino. It's too bad we don't have a star like that again. It's about time for us to have a star quarterback. I'm hoping Thomas McVitie plays well. He might even get a chance to play this year. If we're on the subject of quarterbacks, then I have to reiterate this. I've had some discussions with not the staff itself, but guys around the staff, and sometimes I talk to the staff, but that's on usually a night before a bowl game or something like that. But they are deathly afraid of Peterman going down, and that's not to look at anything negative about Manny Stocker. He's just not a quarterback. He's a kid, an athlete that can throw the ball every once in a while. I knew Berkey was going to leave, and I knew Berkey was never going to play. I watched him 2 years ago with Paul Chris, and when Paul Chris was here, Berkey couldn't hit a a barn, man. You know, if you put it 20 yards in front of him. And he was slow. He was slow with the uptake on the plays. You could see he didn't really understand what was going on. He would take the snap in practice, and he would drift back, and there was no purpose to anything he was doing. Now, I haven't seen Ben DiNucci, but from what I've heard, it's a real long shot for him to play any football for us also, unless he's in a really dire injury situation. So, I was hoping, and I'm still hoping, that the staff finds a transfer quarterback somewhere. You know, Peterman didn't transfer in until almost the end of June. So it's not like we're, you know, we still have a couple months. We have all of June, all of July, and the beginning of August, and, well, two months and a week, basically, to get someone. And we could even get someone in fall camp. You know, they can sign on up until right before the game. I think it is right before the week of the game, the opening game. So, but we desperately need somebody. And one of the reasons is, it's not just because of injury. I talked earlier in the beginning of the podcast about Peterman's bagging it at the end of the year. You know, he truly played poorly in those games. And I think he's a mature adult. I've had some nice conversations with him. He's a mature adult kid. He's not a kid. He's a mature adult. And I don't think it's going to let him shake him. He has a real strong faith in Christianity, and he's a real solid kid, as was Chad Wojtek. I think he'll bounce back from those two games, but the chances he might not. I mean, the chances are he will. I misspoke. But there's a real possibility he could, you know, get the yips also. Those were horrendous games, and they're two really important games. The bowl game, you know, you lose a bowl game, but we could have gotten our ninth win on that Miami game. And granted, it was in Miami, but, they weren't a great team. And all he had to do was really play an average game, get a couple touchdowns under his belt, move the ball up and down the field a little bit. And instead, he was throwing the ball to the other team. So, it's not just injury where we can risk losing a quarterback, but through poor play. And, he's not so good, that won't happen. That's just something we have to worry about. I mean, I worry about Pitt football all the time, believe it or not. It sounds like I don't when I write. I don't go crazy and pull my hair out about it. But I look at things, and I look at the human side of things, and, how many times have we seen players that we think were going to do really well? I mean, we all thought Chad Wojtek was going to be able to keep that job. We thought he was going to be able to come back and have a senior season that was going to build on a pretty good junior season. Contrary public belief, I like Chad Wojtek. I thought he was a decent quarterback for us. He wasn't great. He wasn't very, very good. He was a decent quarterback for us that got some wins. And we had some other problems. Our defense had problems that year, too. We could have one or two more wins there. But we all thought, every Pitt fan I talked to thought, we're going to see Chad Wojtek come back, and he's the type of kid that's going to come back, and he's going to build on what he did his junior year. Then all of a sudden, boom. And this is why I kind of complained and was upset when Wojtek left Pitt, especially because he had just seen what could happen when a transfer comes in. He had just seen how tenuous the starting job was at Pitt. And you know, you can talk about the offensive coordinators as much as you want, but Pat Narduzzi's a head coach. If Pat Narduzzi wants to switch quarterbacks, he'll switch quarterbacks. So I thought Wojtek could have stuck around and would have, at the very least, given us a really solid experience backup. But at the same time, who's to say he wasn't going to be able to compete and beat out Peterman again? You know? Beat out Peterman like Peterman beat him out last time. Especially when Peterman's coming off that crap two games. I don't know. You guys know what I feel about Chad Wojtek. I like the guy, and I just wish he would have stayed at Pitt. I thought he took kind of the easy way out. But, he's going to be playing Auburn. He might get a starting job down there at Eastern Michigan, and or wherever he's going. Eastern Michigan. And, the team he's going to be on plays Auburn the second year, and I just think it would be a real kick if he got into the game and played well on a national stage, at least that'll be shown down in Alabama, I'm sure, that no matter what team he's on, it'll be shown down there. So, anyway, I'm at the 49-minute point, and I thought I'd wrap it up by saying this. I am really happy that we have Pat Narduzzi as a head coach. Pat Narduzzi is a head coach. And I'll tell you why. I think that as far as football goes, he's going to be a good one for us. I'm not sure how good he is with X and O's, but looks like he's surrounding himself with a pretty good staff that will be able to pick up on that. I just remind people that last year was his first year, and this year is really his first recruiting year, and he's going to stick around for a couple years. Now, I had a pretty intense argument with, not an argument, but a pretty intense conversation the night before the bowl game with some guys from Pitt. And I said I didn't think Narduzzi was going to, if he wins here, I didn't think he's going to stick around for more than 5 years. I don't think we'll see a second contract out of him. But that's me, because I look at kind of the cynical side, but and I say, look, these guys are going to go for two things. They're going to go for as much money as they can make, because it's a short career. And secondly, they're going to go to be the pinnacle of the job. If he gets offered by a bigger school, by a more notorious program, and I don't mean notorious in a bad sense, I mean a more well-known program that's up in the top 25 every year, year in and year out, I think he'll take it. And I don't think that'll be a slur on Pitt. I think that's just what's going to happen for Pitt for some time. I hate to use the word stepping stone, but the reality is we have been a stepping stone. And that goes back years and years and years. There's very few coaches say, I want to coach at Pitt, and I'm going to stay at Pitt forever. I mean, we heard Todd Graham was his destination job crap, which is just a flat-out lie. Any coach that says that's lying to you. That's all I got to say. We're gonna have some fun with Pat Narduzzi, and I think we're going to see some really cool things happen with his recruits. He's not hesitant to take people off the team, off the starting lineup, and put other guys in. And that the starting 22 of last season was a lot different than I thought it was going to be. The two deep, especially. So we're going to have a good year. I'm going to try to keep doing this once a week, but I'm going to put more of the stuff into the articles because that's what you'll read. I'm also going to post in this article a couple other links. Some of the stuff is what I talked about, and some other stuff are just interesting things I think you guys would want to read and enjoy on a weekend. So we have, let's see, we're going into June. We have 2 months till fall camp. We're going to have some more recruits coming in, I bet. Remember about recruiting, guys, that almost every year, I remember 2 years ago, I went back and I looked at when we got the first couple recruits. And every year, Pitt gets one or two recruits, like really early, like, you know, the year before. But the bulk of our recruits really start coming in mid-June. Mid-June and July. And then we won't even think about us being late, you know, when August comes around. We'll look at that. We'll say, oh, we have 17 kids or whatever it is. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. I'm worried a little bit about the quarterback recruiting. But, you know, the Schneider kid coming in, Bo Schneider, you never know. He could do well. And McVitie has the tools to do well. But, you know, he didn't have much play in high school. But, and I think that's important. I think experience in high school, especially in the quarterback position, I think it pays off in college. So I would prefer not to see McVitie play at all this year, if possible, and then get him a solid number two or even number one, depending on who we have in the roster going into 2017. Okay, guys, it's been a pleasure to record this, and let me know what you think, if it's worth doing or not. I'll say sayonara. I'm signing off at 1:30 from WRHK in Columbia, Maryland. Bye-bye.